the world's great novels. Universally acclaimed as one of the superb tales of the sea is the story of a great white whale and of Captain Ahab's fatal monomania in pursuing it. The NBC University of the Air presents the third installment of a four-part radio edition of Herman Melville's adventurous classic, Moby Dick, another in the series of books that live, the world's great novels. Pursuing its hunt for whales, and especially for the great white whale, Moby Dick, the Pequod plowed her way steadily towards that area where Captain Ahab felt sure to sight the object of his deadly pursuit. He was cheered and grimly amused by the prophecy of Fadala, his Chinese harpooner, who predicted that Ahab could not die until two hearses were seen on the waters, the first not made by mortal hands, and the wood of the second grown in America. Moreover, declared Fadala, only hemp could kill Ahab.
This is Ishmael again, mateys. Fore and aft, I say, the Pequod was a jolly ship, of good fare and plenty, fine flip and strong, crack fellows all, and capital from boot heels to hatband. Aye, except for Captain Ahab's one relentless purpose, which had entrapped us all. It was never out of his mind. Even in his sleep one night, I heard him cry out,
"Spare it all! The white whale spouts thick blood!"
Well, if the currents ever carry ye to those sweet beaches only beat with water lilies, you will know the days to which we now sail. Warm, clear, ringing, perfumed, overflowing, redundant days. Like goblets of Persian sherbet flaked with rose water snow. And yet, there was a sort of knell ringing in our hearts, like the continual tolling of a bell in a ship that is foundering at sea in a fog. To add to our suspense, an unpredictable series of events now took place. They began one day, hard upon high noon. Ahab was taking his wonted daily observation of the sun to determine our latitude. With his quadrant placed to his eye, he remained in that posture for some moments to catch the precise instant when the sun should gain its precise meridian. Making the observation, he looked back at the sun, then at his quadrant.
Thou tellest me truly where I am, but not where I shall be. Foolish toy. Plaything of haughty admirals, commodores, and captains. What, after all, canst thou do but tell the poor, pitiful point where thou thyself happenest to be on this wide planet? Not one jot more. Thou canst not tell where one drop of water will be tomorrow noon. Curse thee, quadrant. Thus I destroy you upon the deck. Smashed. No longer shall I guide my earthly way by thee. The ship's compass, a dead reckoning by log and line, thee shall conduct me and show me my place on the sea.
To the braces! Up helm! Square in!
By evening of that day, the Pequod was torn of her canvas, and bare pole was left to fight a typhoon which had struck her directly ahead.
A nasty night, Starbuck.
Aye.
All right, men, lash those boats.
Look out! Here comes a big one!
Hang on to the shrouds, men!
Look! Ahab's boat is hove in at the stern.
Like a ship. A bad omen.
And the gale from the east.
The course that Ahab is to run for Moby Dick. Who's there?
Ahab!
We must send down the main topsail yard, sir. Shall I strike it, sir?
Strike nothing.
Lash it. If I had skysail poles, I'd sway them up now.
In God's name, sir.
Well?
Look, the anchors are working loose, sir. Shall I get them inboard?
Strike nothing, stir nothing. Lash everything. Do you take me for the hunchback skipper of some coasting smack? Send down my main topsail yards? Never. Tis with a fair wind, starbuck.
Fair for death and doom, sir.
Loftiest trucks were made for wildest winds. And this brain truck of mine now sails aloft amid the cloud scud.
Forbear, Captain. Tis an ill voyage. Ill begun, ill continued.
I admit the speechless power of the storm. But to the last gasp of my earthquake life, starbuck. I'll dispute it.
Let me square the yard, sir, while we still may, and make a fair wind of it homewards.
Avast, starbuck. Let obedience to my flat command. None but cowards send down their brain trucks in tempest time.
It struck us.
Where?
The compass. It struck the compass.
It's happened before, starbuck.
But not to me, sir. Take warning, sir.
Never. Henceforth, I shall be the compass. Look! Look, starbuck! What a hurroosh is aloft there! I'd even take it for sublime, did I not know that the colic is a noisy melody!
Some hours after midnight, the typhoon abated so much that through the strenuous exertions of starbuck, the shivered remnants of the jib and fore and main topsails were cut adrift from the spars and went eddying away to leeward like the feathers of an albatross. Next morning, the not-yet-subsided sea rolled in slow billows of mighty bulk, and striving in the Pequod's gurgling track, pushed her on like giant's palms outspread. Suddenly, on the horizon, a ship was sighted.
Where away?
3 points on the starboard bow, sir!
Man my boat! Stand by to lower!
In less than a minute, his boat and crew were dropped to the water and were soon alongside of the stranger, which showed English colors. The stranger's captain was a burly, good-natured, fine-looking man of 60 or thereabouts. But what was most singular, he had one artificial arm made of sperm whale bone.
Ship ahoy! Has seen the white whale?
White whale?
Aye, has seen it.
See ye this arm of mine?
Tis a match to my leg, Captain. I'm coming aboard.
1 minute, Captain. Jump, boys. Swing over the cutting tackle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, lower away. That's it. Hold it, hold it. Straddle the hook, Captain. Hoist him up, boys.
Aye, aye.
As I walked out one morning fair to view the meadows round, there I spied a maiden fair come tripping o'er the ground.
Steady, boys, steady.
Blow, ye winds of morning.
Ready, Chicago!
Clear away the morning dew and blow, boys!
Avast heaving there, avast heaving! All right, swing him in.
Aye, aye.
Gently. Over the bulwarks. There. Welcome aboard, Captain. I'm Captain Boomer.
Aye, aye, hearty. I'm Captain here. Let us shake bones together, Captain. An arm and a leg. An arm that never can shrink and a leg that never can run.
I'd consider it an honor, sir, to treat you to a glass of fine Geneva in my cabin.
Very well, sir.
Steward, skip ahead and prepare the honors.
Oh, yeah, sir.
Won't you join us, Dr. Bunger?
Delighted.
But, Captain, where didst thou see the white whale and how long ago?
1 month ago. Step right in, sir.
Aye.
Doctor?
Thank you.
Ah, that's right, steward. That's the bottle. Sit down, Captain Ahab.
And he took that arm of yours off, did he?
Aye. He was the cause of it, at least. And your leg, too, eh?
Aye, but spin me the yarn.
How was it?
Well, sir, it was the first time in my life that I'd ever cruised those waters. I was ignorant of the white whale at that time. So that'll be all, Stuart.
All right. What
happened?
Well, one day we lowered for a pod of four or five whales, and my boat fastened to one of them.
Aye.
A regular circus horse he was, too. That went milling and milling around so that my boat's crew could only trim dish by sitting all their sterns on the outer gunwale.
Aye.
So presently, up breaches from the bottom of the sea a bouncing great whale with a milky white head and hump and crow's feet and wrinkles.
It was he. It was he.
Harpoon sticking in near his starboard fin.
Yeah, they were mine. My irons. But go on, go on.
Give me a chance then, man. Well, this old great-grandfather with the white head and hump runs all a-foam into the pot and goes to snapping furiously at my fast line.
What a departed. Free the fast fish. An old trick. I know him well.
Ah, this is the most excellent Geneva. And by the way, Captain, this is Dr. Bunger, ship surgeon. Bunger, my lad, the captain. Captain
Ahab. How do you do? But go on with the story.
Well, how it was exactly, I don't quite know. But in biting the line, it got foul of his teeth. Caught there somehow. But we didn't know it then. It was only when we pulled on the line, bounce, we came plump on his hump.
Would it have been me?
The other whale went off to windward, fluking. So seeing how matters stood and what a noble great whale it was, the noblest and biggest I ever saw, sir, in my life, I resolved to capture him, spite of the boiling rage he seemed to be in.
I know that ugly rage of his.
And quick as a cat, I jumped into my first mate's boat, which, you see, was gunwale and gunwale with mine, and snatching the first harpoon, let this old great-grandfather have it.
You didn't kill him, did you?
Kill him. Heart and soul alive, man. The next instant, in a jiff, I was blind as a bat, both eyes befogged with black foam, and the whale's tail looming straight up in the air like a marble steeple.
That's what he did to me.
Too late to stern all then. But as I was groping after the second harpoon, down comes the tail like a Lima Tower, cutting my boat in two, and flukes first the white hump back through the wreck as though it were all chips.
Hey, when that happened to me, I seized the line knife. Tried to kill him with a 6-inch blade.
And I struck out and tried to get away from him. Would have, too. Only when he went down like a flash, the barber of that cursed second iron towing along near me caught me here, right here on the shoulder, and bore me down to hell's flames, I was thinking. When all of a sudden, thank the good God, the barb ripped its way clear along the whole length of me arm, and up I floated. Now, Bunga boy, spin your part of the yarn.
Well, it was a shocking bad wound. On taking my advice, Captain Boomer here, stood our old semi off...
Samuel Enderby is the name of my ship.
Stood our old...
Go on, boy.
Stood our old semi off to the northward to get out of the blazing hot weather. But it was no use. How did all I could set up with him nights was very severe with him in the matter of diet.
Oh, very severe. Drinking hot rum toddies with me every night till he couldn't see to put on the bandages.
Oh, no.
Sending me to bed half seas over.
Oh, never.
Oh, a great watcher and very dietetically severe is Dr. Bunga. Oh,
now, Captain.
Bunga, you dog, laugh out, why don't you? You know you're a precious jolly rascal. But heave it, boy. I'd rather be killed by you than kept alive by any other man.
Oh. I might as well say now, en passant, there's the French remark, that I myself, Jack Bunga, late of the Reverend Clergy, am a strict, total abstinence man. I never drink...
Water. He never drinks it. Fresh water throws him into the hydrophobia. But go on with the arm story.
I was about to observe, before Captain Boomer's facetious interruption, that in spite of my severest endeavors, his arm kept getting worse. And it was an ugly gaping wound, 2 feet and several inches long. And when it grew black, I knew what that threatened. And off it came. Well, that ivory arm of his there is the captain's work, not mine. He ordered the carpenter to make it with that club hammer on the end of it to knock someone's brains out with, I suppose, as he tried mine once.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. See this dent, Captain Abe, in my skull? There, there. The captain will tell you all that came there. He knows.
He was born with it.
Oh.
Oh, you solemn rogue. You bunger. Was there ever such another bunger in the watery world? Bunger, when you die, you ought to die in pickle, you dog. You should be preserved for future ages, you rascal. What became of the white whale? Oh, yes. Well, after he sounded, we didn't see him again for some time.
Didn't thou cross his wake again?
Twice.
But could not fasten?
Didn't want to try. Ain't one limb enough. What should I do without this other arm?
You might try giving him a chance at your left arm for bait to get back the right.
No, thank you, Bunga, my boy. He's welcome to the arm he has, since I can't help it and didn't know him then. But not another one. No more white whales for me. I've lowered for him once, and that has satisfied me.
Not me. Not me.
There would be great glory in killing him, I know that. And there's a shipload of precious sperm in him, but hark ye, he's best let alone. Don't you think so, Captain Ahab?
Aye, he is. But he will still be hunted for all that. Besides, what is best let alone is not always what least allures. He's a magnet. How long since thou saw him last?
The day before yesterday.
What? 2 days ago and me sitting here? I must go. Which way was he heading? Quick, man.
Good Lord, what's the matter? Are you crazy? Your blood's at the boiling point.
Which way was he heading?
South or west. Here, have another glass of wine.
Avast, I must go. Padella! Padella! Man the boat! Make hay! Make hay!
By heavens, Bunga lad. That man has a quaggy spot in him somewhere.
The next morning, the bodings of the crew were destined to receive a most plausible confirmation in the fate of one of their number. For at sunrise, this man went from his hammock to the masthead. And whether it was that he was not yet half waked from his sleep, he had not been long at his perch when a cry was heard. A cry and a rushing, and then white bubbles in the blue of the sea. The lifebuoy, a long, slender cask hanging aft, was dropped from the stern, but no hand rose to seize it. And the cask being warped, it filled and sank. Thus, the first man of the Pequod that went aloft to look out for the white whale on the white whale's own peculiar ground, that man was swallowed up in the deep. And the lost lifebuoy was now to be replaced.
Carpenter?
Aye, Mr. Starbuck.
When Queequeg was sick last month, you made him a special coffin.
I made a leg for Captain Ahab, and he wears it like a gentleman. But when I made the bandbox for Queequeg, he refused to die and gets well when he sees it. And all my pains went for nothing with that coffin.
Where is it now?
Stowed away, sir, in case he changes his mind.
I want you to make a life buoy out of that coffin.
A life buoy, sir, out of a coffin?
Well, it'll make a good enough one. And you can do it easily, so rig it, Carpenter. So hear me? Rig it.
And shall I nail down the lid, sir?
Aye.
And shall I caulk the seam, sir?
Aye.
And shall I then pay over the same with pitch, sir?
What possesses thee? Make a life buoy of the coffin and no more.
Nail down the lid. Caulk the seams. Pay over the same with pitch. Batten them down tight. And hang it with a snap spring over the ship's stern. Mr. Starbuck, sir, if I was superstitious like some folks, I wouldn't crupper myself with a coffin. Well, I'll have me 30 separate lifelines, each 3 feet long, hanging all around to the coffin. Then if the ship goes down, there'll be 30 lively fellows all fighting for one coffin. sight not seen very often beneath the sun, Mr. Starbuck. Not very often, sir.
That same day, slowly crossing the deck from the scuttle, Ahab leaned over the side and watched how his shadow in the water sank to his gaze, the more that he strove to pierce the salty profundity. But the enchanted air seemed to dispel for a moment the cankerous thing in his soul. Starbuck saw him, saw how heavily he leaned over the side, and careful not to intrude, yet drew near and stood there. Ahab turned.
Starbuck.
Sir?
It's a mild wind and a mild-looking sky. On just such a day as this, I struck my first whale, a boy harpooner of 18.
I, too, can remember the first day I used the harpoon.
And all the years since of continual whaling. Years of privation, peril, and storm time. Years on this pitiless sea, forsaking the peaceful land to make war on the horrors of the deep. Aye. Where lies the final harbor, whence we unmoor no more? In what rapt ether sails the world, of which the weariest will never weary?
Captain Ahab, sir...
When the poorest landsman has had fresh fruit to his daily hand and has broken the world's fresh bread... I have fed on moldy crusts. Aye, oceans away from my wife, whom I wedded, then sailed for Cape Horn next day. Wife? Rather a widow with her husband alive. I widowed that poor girl when I married her, Starbuck.
Why not return now, Captain?
I feel sometimes as though I were Adam, staggering beneath the piled centuries since paradise. Starbuck, you have a wife waiting for you back in Nantucket, too, and mark you. I want you to stay on board when the boats lower to give chase to Moby Dick. That hazard shall not be thine.
Oh, Captain, why should anyone give chase to that hated fish? Let us fly these deadly waters. Sail for home, for old Nantucket.
Too late. Listen, Starbuck. We are turned round and round in this world like yonder windlass, and fate is the handspike. And there's an inscrutable, unearthly thing, hidden and cruel, that commands me. Keeps jamming me ahead against all natural longings. But it's a mild wind and a mild sky. Air smells as if it blew from a faraway meadow. Perhaps they've been making hay somewhere under the slopes of the Andes. The mowers are sleeping in the fields. Aye. Toil we how we may, we all sleep at last upon the fields. Aye, and rust amid greenness, as last year's scythes flung down and leapt in the half-cut swaths. So you see, Starbuck, we must live in the game, and if necessary, die in it.
A few hours later, a large ship, the Rachel, was descried, bearing directly down upon the Pequod, all her spars thickly clustered with men. As the broad-winged, windward stranger drew nigh, she struck her sails, and her commander was seen being lowered away in his boat. His boat hook soon clinched the Pequod's main chain, and he sprang to the deck.
Has seen the white whale, Captain?
Today.
Hey, what is he? Not killed. Not killed, man. How was it?
I am Captain Gardner of the Rachel. And I need your help desperately.
Quick, tell me the white whale.
Three of our boats engaged with a shoal of whales about 5 miles from my ship. When all of a sudden, to windward, the whale they call Moby Dick loomed up in the other direction.
In which direction?
Dead south.
Starbuck! Brace forward! Up helm!
Wait! Wait, Captain, I haven't told you all. My son, a lad but 12 years old, was in the boat that lowered to give chase to Moby Dick.
Ah. So that's why you had every other man aloft on the lookout?
Yes. Their boat was towed out of sight by the white whale, and we've been searching ever since. 12 years old the boy was.
He must face his perils like everyone else.
No. No, I beg of you, Captain. Let me charter your ship. I will gladly pay for it to join me in the search. You must. You must, and you shall do this for me. Yes. Yes, you relent. I see it. Run, men, now, and stand by to square in the yards.
Avast! Touch not a rope yarn. Captain Gardiner, I will not do it. Even now I lose time. Goodbye. God bless you, man, and may I forgive myself, but I must go.
What, I beg of you, sir.
Mr. Starbuck, look at the binnacle watch, and in exactly 3 minutes warn off all strangers. Then brace forward again, and let the ship sail dead south as before.
Aye, aye, sir.
Moby Dick is within our reach at last, and nothing, nothing can stop me now.
Captain Gardiner silently returned to his boat, and soon the two ships diverged their wakes, and long as the strange vessel, the Rachel, was in view, she was seen to yaw hither and thither at every dark spot, however small, on the sea. But by her still halting course and winding, woeful way, you plainly saw that this ship that so wept with spray still remained without comfort. She was Rachel, weeping for her children because they were not. I was to see her again, mateys, under terrifying circumstances. Moby Dick, by Herman Melville, is one of the world's great novels, brought to you each week by the NBC University of the Air. Next week, be sure to hear the final episode from Moby Dick, and remember that this and countless other great books are to be had in your local public library. To enhance your enjoyment of these broadcasts, NBC offers you Herbert Gorman's Handbook of the World's Great Novels. Just send 25 cents with your request to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. Remember that address. It's World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. Moby Dick is adapted for radio by Frederick Schlick. The music composed by Emil Soderstrom of the orchestra directed by Bernard Berquist. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Ishmael is played by Everett Clark, Captain Ahab by Jess Pugh, and Starbuck by Donald Gallagher. Others were Maurice D. Copeland, Gilbert Ferguson, George Kluge, Sherman Marks, Clifford Norton, and Arthur Peterson. And this is Dave Garraway. The program came to you from Chicago and has been a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations. Death on our highways is increasing. National Safety Council figures show that traffic accidents have been mounting since the end of the war. Smash-ups have reached more and more. One a minute, all day, every day of the year. And during this winter season, the danger is even greater. So whether you ride or walk, be careful. Cats may have 9 lives, but remember, you have only one. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.